Poetry on the Radio, poetry in and around the ACT. Today we go back to a July 2022 reading at the Manning Clark House by Judith Nangala Crispin, plus The Rhyming Bugle, poetry news from the Canberra region. For Artsound FM, I'm Peter Searles. Judith Nangala Crispin is a poet and visual artist living on unceded Yuin country on the Southern Tablelands. Her two collections of poetry are The Myrrh Bearers, Puncher and Watman, 2015, and The Lumen Seed, Daylight Books, 2017. The Lumen Seed contains photographs and poems she made with the Walpiri people of the Tanami Desert, north and west of Alice Springs, with whom she's long spent part of each year. She's a member of Oculi Collective and an artist in residence with Musica Viva, and traces her ancestry to the First Nations peoples of northeastern Victoria and the New South Wales Riverina, and to Ghana, Senegal, France, Ireland, Scotland, and the Ivory Coast. At the Manning Clark House reading, Judith Nangala Crispin's first poem was about the dingo, with whom she clearly associates.
I've got a poem called The Dingo Fence, and this poem is dedicated to John Mundine, because John Mundine's songlines belong to dingo. The motorcycle and its travelling shadow are aliens in this flatness. The horizon draws back, becomes a wide, flat line. Slate grey ranges breach like submarines, the sky eggshell blue, Monet's clouds. And everything is the road. It bisects the landscape in a straight line hundreds of kilometres long. When it curves, it does so in a broad, flat arc. At night, the stars detach and become headlights. Vulpecula and Lupus, constellations of the dog, are lights of an approaching road train. By day there's power lines, a wire fence that stretches into nothing. Sometimes tracks of dirt bikes or community cars, figure eights, partly erased by salt, but the road is primary. All forces converge there. Last roadhouse after Elliot. A broken concrete camel lies on its side near a tall cactus and a cage of budgerigars. A tourist approaches in a Pajero with a bullock's skull strapped to the bonnet. He slows, then speeds away. A sign on the bowsers reads, "Closed indefinitely because of the dingoes." White people have been afraid of dingoes since Captain Cook. A dingo can pass for a dog or a wolf, but it's neither. A dingo is a shapeshifter, sometimes a sparrowhawk, an old man meandering down the road, a girl in a red dress. They disguise themselves in mirage, in Fata Morgana, a southern wind, garrulous with finches or heavy owls. When dingoes howl, the whole landscape shakes. Waterfalls appear in stony mountains. Rain fills the dormant creeks. A dingo can pass for a dog or a wolf. It can enter your home as a pet, a rescue, a cattle dog, an abandoned Kelpie cross. A dingo rotates its wrists to open your doors, windows, or locks. It can enter your home with its strange golden eyes and watch you sleep. Dingoes don't care if you typecast them as cowardly, promiscuous, vicious, or cunning. They've heard it all before, and they're still here. Unlike a wolf, a dingo will hold your gaze. Unlike a dog, it holds your gaze for a maximum of 3 seconds. Dingoes do not seek a window to your soul. They see your soul already. A person is a mutated dingo. A dingo's nose is longer than a person's and its head is rounder. White people have been afraid of dingoes since Captain Cook. They built a dingo fence spanning 5,614 kilometres from the Darling Downs to the cliffs of the Nullarbor. In their cowardice and cunning, they built the world's longest fence. No choice, they said. It's the dingoes or the livestock. Dingoes know evil has a scent like rotting metal, like meat and rusting tin, a colonial aroma, the blood libel of sheep eaters. The dingo fence does not keep dingoes out. They run along its length hunting for a hole, and when they find one, they pass their babies through the fence. Eagles are caught in the wire. Kangaroos, misjudging a jump, hang by their back legs until they die from exposure or shock. Dingoes are hard to kill because of hybrid vigour. They can swivel their heads 180 degrees and look back along their spines. When they hunt, their ears turn like radar dishes. One ear points forward and the other back. A dingo could be tracking you now and you'd never know. When they sleep, They keep one ear against the ground and the other in the air, listening to two worlds at the same time. Dingoes are autonomous. They dig their own homes, follow their own laws, hunt their own foods. They forge strategic alliances with women and bats, diamond doves, bowerbirds and wrens. Dingoes taught women how to hunt. Given the chance, a dingo will poison your dog with orchid venom and take its place. When you speak to a dingo about obedience or puppy training, it hears the word slavery. When you offer a dingo toys, dog collars or soft indoor beds, it hears the word slavery. A dingo is teeth, bones and fur. It will not perform tricks. It does not win ribbons in kennel clubs. No dingo has appeared in a dog's family tree for at least 10,000 years. Dingoes are as old as the last ice age. Unlike pedigree dogs, their lineage did not originate in last century eugenics. A dingo can fake interest in universities, art galleries, politics, and God if it must to survive, but it finds this distasteful. It is not a full-blood, half-blood, hybrid, real, purebred dingo dog or authentic. It is not a footnote to your essays on miscegenation. Dingoes have wolf and dog ancestry. If you ask a dingo how it identifies, it will say it's complicated. It does not see itself as the living embodiment of extinction. A dingo is not looking for your validation. If you suggest a dingo should get a DNA test, it will kill and eat you in your suburban dog park. Dingoes have an unbreakable connection to land. Their connection is not a lifestyle choice. The status of dingoes as outcasts is not lost on them. They choose country over kin. They sleep with their bellies to country's skin. When they wake, they offer her their crawling dance. And a dingo does not give a shit what you think about that connection. Sheep eaters have failed to exterminate the dingoes. Their poison baits lay uneaten in the scrub. Dingoes understand traps and strychnine in a way that wolves and dogs do not. They will not be contained by a fence. Dingoes didn't kill the thylacines, but they saw who did. They snarled at the newspaper's obviously fake photographs of thylacines holding chickens in their mouths. The same newspapers that now run pictures of photoshopped dingoes tearing at murdered lambs. Dingoes are marsupial predators. They are not interested in your sheep. In South Australia, the dog fence board administers and maintains the fence. In Queensland, the wild dog barrier fence panel administers and maintains the fence. In New South Wales, the wild dog destruction board administers and maintains the fence. In Northern Territory, Aboriginal protected land, the dingoes roam free. This is called The Shadowless Lights, which was the term the Gnostics used to refer to the archons, the evil guys that got between humans and God, the girl god. The shadows lights. On nights like this, we watch military planes fly over, their wing lights vanishing in the ebb and flow of stars. A galaxy drapes itself over ridges. Mount Dempsey, Mount Gregory, places named for strangers who never asked if they already had names. Neckar, the yellow giant, pierces the eastern sky over Matt Wilson Crater, the only known elliptic crater with a mountain in its heart. From here, the desert spirals out in networks of dry creeks like veins in the eye. For travellers, the night sky is a map of mountains, trading routes, the migratory paths of moths. In the middle of nowhere, Hercules plunges both legs into Victoria River. Between Marfik and Russell Getty, a superhighway bridge is the only access to Bradshaw Field Training Area, 9,000 square kilometres of boabs and monsoon forests. We gave it all to the shadowless lights. Each year, US squadrons come to practice killing. They drop explosives, pyrotechnics, satellite-guided weapons that make the sky burn. These painted caves, these ghost gums loved by Namajira, just collateral in the global offensive of oil, guns and Christ. Across the third world, stadium evangelists fund rape rooms and machete militia, your kingdom come, because Jesus appeared to them in dreams, saying, forget the lambs, only the wolf matters. And the wolf speaks in munitions and biomimetic weapons, mass translations of the Bible into Farsi. On nights like this, kids, hunting for bullet casings, swim the river. commando crawling through hummock grass where the desert floor trembles under tanks. They move like spinifex in flood. Cresting the escarpment, they'll lie belly to earth, watching choppers ascend and descend over black lizard runways, the cubes and gribs of empire. When they're older, they'll enlist with Norforce, the Aboriginal surveillance unit, like proper warriors, ochre-mark their faces, break the cycle of debt and cashless welfare cards, defend country like their ancestors. It begins here, in these fields of blackened acacia. Soldiers in masks released canisters of poisonous gas. Clouds obscure the granite cliffs. Birds falling one by one like Gnostic vowels. It begins in the holy city Samara on the other side of the world. Allied troops carry rifles inscribed with Bible verses, and the city had no need of the sun, neither of the moon to shine in it. A tank slides through streets with Jesus killed Muhammad scrawled in Arabic across its side. Anyone who objects is shot, only the wolf. Not even Christ gives a shit about the lambs. And in these desert communities, Aboriginal kids camouflage action figures in netting and vines. We ride east toward the crater. The witchetty is dark. A hard and silent dawn is coming. On the bridge, as we pass, a lone soldier tracks a peregrine falcon through his rifle sights.
Today on Poetry on the Radio, we're hearing Judith Nangala Crispin reading in 2022 at the Manning Clark House.
This is my last post. I love you, see you in heaven. There was a moment after I knew he'd hanged himself when I mistakenly believed I was alive, really alive. Not just quickened by loss or imagining his last electric seconds in the tree, choosing air and not the heavy journey home, kids in foster care, the money running out, all his night windows haunted by dangerous stars, serpents kaput, Mars, the moon. And I'd meant to tell him something about friendship or love, but I forgot it all so quickly. Today his ghost brings me to Wave Hill, Kalkarindji, where the killing snake sleeps in the cool of Wattie Creek. But I've not seen it, not in all these years, and maybe it's time to admit the connection is broken. We're alone on this earth now, and monstrous. All our stories are narratives of extinction, the shattered rhapsodies of addiction and PTSD. This community is surrounded by massacre sites. Seal Yard, Rifle Waterhole, Black Gin Hill, Blackfellas Knob, Gidea Creek, Dararagu, the Black Range, and the dead are always on the highway, flagging down Toyotas to ask for cigarettes, but by the time you found your packet, they've gone, transformed to curlews or swarms of bees. You don't know how many ghosts a stranger carries. You just know that no one's fully human anymore. Near the football oval, a strange wind checks the motorcycle gauges, sounding like and unlike his voice in an Alice Springs bookstore, saying none of those poetry creeps understood Ujuru, what she gave them, what it cost her. After that, he sold his camera, gave his children's toy boxes and clothes away. A clean break, he said. The signs were all there, but I missed them. Shooting star, he told me. We call him brother. He makes you heavy and bitter, but we can block him. We know the songs to stop him. But when it came right down to it, he never sang those songs. There was always something unseen in him, something hiding in the bone. I can see him plummeting from his belt and the black air holds him. His arms lift, meeting like wingtips above his head, and his lyra in Vega, a killer, the night eagle, his strangled body decorated with pills and crushed beer cans. Let the insects come. After I knew he'd hanged himself, there was a moment when I mistakenly believed I was alive, really alive, not just pretending not to be dead, and I'd meant to tell him something about redemption and how country's heart is still beating under the freeways and shopping malls of this fucked up colonial culture, but I forgot it all so quickly. This poem, which comes out of the deep-seated fear that I and every poet I've ever met has had of death, is called There Is Also a Body of Stars. I only have this to offer. And I don't know if you'll value it or even remember this letter when you need to. I just know that no other truth remains to me. South of Willowra, budgerigars unfold green helixes down Lander River or along south-flowing estuaries toward the tin mines at Old and Ingi Station. Country speaks in hieroglyphs. Correspondences of worm lines in wood and the river's trace. Snake vine in fire-blackened trees. On the flatlands, bush onion dries to stalks, like Betty Hill's drawings of Zeta Reticuli copied on a grounded starship. And there's not much difference out here between reality and mirage. Heat blurs everything but sound, and the desert manifests as lizards rattling over stone. Insects sing strange quadlibets in their orphic mud-bound nests, and visions come easily. I've seen tree lines float mid-air, lightning spidering their limbs and storms hanging over them like the carnivorous mouths of orchids. I've watched emus pass through interdimensional doors, appearing and vanishing late at night when road trains line the darkened highway's edge and thunderheads over Mount Esther are studded by Andromeda and Coma Berenices. I can't tell you what a soul is, but I know it's dangerous at night under stranger planets when wind shifts its auguries of cloud across the moon. And like you, I know the world is ending. I saw the future in a taipan, crossing streamlined and purposeful into my campfire's circle, starlight sliding over her scales. And in that moment, I felt a snake's thoughts turning in my head, a snake's belly over coarse, cool sand and the drumming of her single-chambered heart. Wind, heavy with puturi and fish poison acacia, coming in from the north. The taipan looped and stilled, so close I could see firelight reflecting in a single milk-blue eye, and she began to shed. Maybe it was the heat or the vapours of those heady, oily plants, but as she sloughed her loosened skin, that taipan began to speak. She'd seen black glass pooling in the desert, where air ignites itself to sand, and she's had visions of the Anthropocene's end, continents buried under cinders and ice. In the megacities, swarming evangelicals like Mardi Gras skeletons, wearing flower garlands, wearing t-shirts with slogans declaring, "Beam me up or the truth is out there." Even at the end, they're still waiting for the nebulas to open, for the lunatic angels to descend with rescue boats for believers. But the risen Christ has long since evacuated, taking with him his Foo Fighters, Fast Walkers and Greys before the first comets crash. Before the dark matter anaconda arches over houses and fields, pulsing with cumulonimbus and miniature black holes, and swallows everything we've ever loved. Pardalotes in noon shadow, love letters and photographs, the speaking powerful trees. Paddy Smith, ankle deep in surf, gathering seahorses and pearls. David Gulpilil, tracking pelicans on a West Australian beach, and it's late. The taipan struggles in her membrane of half-discarded skin, her eyes clouded and oracular. "It's late," she says, "and I know you want to give up. Just let yourself drown. Let the fury of this psychotic world unmake you, but I have given you everything I hold holy, this single, unarticulated, resurrecting word, and if you won't fight now, then when?" Around this body, she continued, of organs and marrow and bones, there is an immutable body of stars, breath light, blood light, body of plasma and suns wrapping you like a mollusk, like Elvis in a sparkling rhinestone suit. She fell silent, and for a long time I only heard sighs and rustling skin. But when dawn struck its temple bell across the ranges, I watched that taipan slide translucent out of mounded scales, her whole length coruscating rainbow spectra and lightning, and she was rayed like a newly formed sun, and she lifted her slow head into light. All right, we can have a poem about Fred Williams or more UFOs. Anyone?
Fred.
Fred? Fred. All right, we'll go Fred. Okay, this is Vinterizer. It's for the Music of Viva production that's just finished with a pictures of Fred Williams, and it's dedicated to Lynn Williams, his wife. And spoiler alert, Lynn Williams is the main character in here that's not Fred Williams. I dreamed Fred Williams walked again in the highlands of Mount Kosciuszko, moon cast, trailing cosmic dust, dawn in the night's vault. He walks the snow level where eucalypts drop their roots in ice. Down the four lines, forests sweep the foothills in vast blue gestures. What does it matter if the body is real or imagined? He mirrors a photograph from 1975, bare-shouldered with snow in his hair. Fred surveys the weather, chooses a vantage point. A rucksack is a makeshift easel, pencils laying out in the shale and flint. And he knows this country, these slopes crossed in mauve shadow, tablelands reaching to moraines and ice age lakes. In alpenglow, the mountain lifts its finger into a sky the same colour as frost. On the high horizon, snow fields curl over peaks like a Japanese wave. He waits in the hush of falling forests, snowflakes wandering between trunks. He waits like an antenna, just lets it come. Contrails from a passing plane mark the sky. Fred follows the line in graphite, his hand arching like the neck of a sleeping bird. Chiaroscuros of last year's fires, stark white, the trees in ebony and ash flower. He draws snow gums, the ambiguities of saltbush in melting snow. There's no focal point, just gum leaves and the light through leaves. Midday shadows withdraw under stones, and in the day's amber he sees her grazing in sprawling cassia, an albino emu, white on white, camouflaged against the snow. There's a place the travellers come through, an oculus, like a hole in the sky. It opens and closes constantly. You can find it if you watch the birds. See where they pass in and out of reality. A flame robin appears in a darkling line of crows. A wedgetail morphs in wind. The white emu looks steadily through the trees. Fred holds her gaze a moment, then she turns, flings open her beak and throws thunder like a warning in the old drumming languages over open kilometres of bush. And in the after echo of that sound, she flexes her powerful legs and is gone. Fred studies her three-toed tracks. The centre toe of each foot is dislocated. On sharper descents, she drops feathers in the low scrub, her tracks vanishing in tangles of pale and silver plumes. He follows water down below the snow line where ice melts to torrents. Waterfalls break open the mountain's chest. Quartz from its granite bones hold the sun. He turns a piece in his hand, the light made solid, an earthbound star, an eye opening in his palm. And through his hand's eye, Fred sees the mathematics of lichens and frost, the phantasmagoria of the dividing range unfolding, dismembered forests, the caves and cliffs all threaded with hidden life. Mountain rapids drop to horse camps and creeks, places where the bush collects itself. He sketches the scene, tension emanating from the middle out, wings razor across fire-blackened trees, in a forest of vertical lines, curve of a dark forest pond. From the cover of straggly gums, he sees her impossibly white in an amphitheatre of falling bark. Evenfall touches her neck feathers iridium blue, and she's stamping foot to foot, shifting her weight like the steps of some ancestral dance or increased ceremony for marbles, car keys or bolts, the unlikely fancies of flightless birds. He draws a landscape without emu. Upside down, the amphitheatre inverted like a fish's spine, erosion gullies descending to mountains, their peaks hidden in rolling clouds, and beneath them, in black and ice moon, the whole night crosses over. Figures on paper, carved in earth or on stones, are dangerous. Something enters with their likeness. A forest canopy in changing light is a counterfeit ceiling of stars. Vortices in storm clouds coil and lengthen. A snake in a thunderhead. Figures are open gates. Something mantic comes, disguises itself as another and learns its language. Fred draws frozen creeks, the high slopes stubbled with charred trees, but not the emu. Snow gums deep etched at night are line and plane and shadow. Their upper reaches open to the cold clear stars, moon in its third quarter. Cosmic emu rests in Centaurus. Between Fred and the galaxies, sparks travel, satellites and space junk, bogon moths with their light-trapping wings are min-min. Eucalypts shimmer and slant away, land becomes paint, Fred becomes land, quartz veined like the mountain, his middle toe dislocates, lightnings tangle inside him like snakes in a hollow tree. Owl light on the wildflower heath. He follows kangaroo trails down past farmhouses and wooden cattle yards. A dog barks from a mound of furrowed earth, storm clouds burgeoning at its back. A kookaburra was with him then, in oyster and cornflower blue and the first rain. In a ruined charcoal burner's hut, Fred paints the sky with three gouache suns, fiercely coloured in the yellows of alpine flowers. Frost spiders the window pane. Dawn's aurora withdraws microbats under eaves. I see him, dressed in sunfire, in the blended call of birds. The mountain spreads around him, sky opening like a lightning-riven tree, and he's just waiting for that intelligent light to come, to flood the world in colour. Red earth, green cloud, the air above the ranges stained cobalt and eucalyptus teal. I dreamed a hole in the sky over Mount Kosciuszko, where travellers come through, birds passing the sun like lit needles, and on the mountain's lower slopes, Fred Williams and a white emu were dancing, legs akimbo and ankle deep in the snow.
Today on Poetry on the Radio, we've heard excerpts from Judith Nangala Crispin's reading in July 2022 at the Manning Clark House in Forest. The Manning Clark House reading this month, on Thursday, March 27 at 7 p.m, presents Hazel Hall and Deborah Dawkins. For ArtSound FM, I'm Peter Searles.
The Rhyming Bugle. On Monday, March 24 at 7 p.m. at Smith's Alternative in Civic, That Poetry Thing presents Leonard James from Western Australia and Audrey McCormick from the ACT, plus open mic. Leonard James from Perth writes poetry in various styles and has organised many poetry events, such as Duck and Dash Poetry's annual online poetry fundraiser and free book giveaway, and workshops at the Lorikeet Centre. Audrey McCormick is a student poet who has been a three-time national finalist in the Australian Poetry Slam. Hazel Hall is an Australian poet and musicologist. From 2012 to 2018, she was founder and convener of the School of Music Poets, ACT, which collaborated with musicians, songwriters and artists to produce a series of chapbooks. She directed the monthly event Poetry at Manning Clark House from 2018 to 2022. Deborah Dawkins is a Canberra poet working on her first collection. Her poems about family, the female gaze and the uncanny have appeared in the Canberra Times and Cordite. She was shortlisted for the 2023 Australian Catholic University Prize. On Monday, March 31, That Poetry Thing is a big open mic. Participants have 3 minutes and can sign up on the night. Your MC, Peter Robinson. On Monday, April 14 at 7 p.m, That Poetry Thing at Smith's Alternative presents Sarah Temporal and Paul Collis. Poets for the open mic sign up on the night from 6:40 p.m. with MC Shane Strange. The next day, on Tuesday, April 15 at Smith's at 6:30 p.m, Sarah Temporal leads a poetry workshop suitable for beginner to advanced writers. Poetry on the Radio is produced weekly on unceded Ngunnawal country in the studios of ArtSound FM. Series hosts are Kimberly K. Williams and Peter Searles, who produced the program with me, Peter Monahan. Poetry on the Radio is heard each Sunday at 4:30 p.m. and again at 10:30 p.m. on Mondays. Find out more on the Poetry on the Radio page under the Programs tab at artsound.fm. Our theme is an imagining of an ancient Greek hymn to the muse Calliope by Gregorio Paniagua and the Atrium Musica de Madrid.